this is about techno fixes, and techno fixes, beware, is being presented to you by Rike and Rainer, and I give the stage to you.
Hi, and welcome to our talk, Techno Fixes, Beware, Tech Fictions as Replacement for Social and Political Change. We are delighted that you're all here with us. I'm Rike, I'm a policy advisor at Friends of the Earth, one of the biggest environmental NGOs in Germany, also known as BUND, and I'm an economist, climate activist, and also a proud member of the Bits and Bäume Network, and I'm here with Rainer.
Hello, my name is Rainer. I'm co-chair of the Forum Computer Professionals for Peace and Societal Responsibility, also happy member of the Bits and Bäume Network. I have a background in computer science and philosophy, and my working areas are sustainability and also tech narratives, which brings us directly to the point.
And we both work at the intersection of sustainability and technology, and in our political work we notice that there's something wrong about the way we talk about tech in the context of global crises, especially environmental and human rights issues. So this talk is based on our daily experience with the tech discourse in politics and science, and just firstly, of course, there's a lot of potential in technology and innovation, but many times tech is overestimated as a solution for social and environmental challenges. These misconceptions might seem random, but we and other smart colleagues and activists found patterns over time in the misuse of tech narratives. So this talk is a working definition, with the goal to help you spot techno fixes and not be distracted from real solutions.
So what will we do now? First, we'll talk about the background and the problem of technology for sustainability, talk about patterns of misleading tech promises, then give some examples and analyze them. And then we want to explain what we think are reasons for this, and then conclude with talking about actual solutions or actual usages, and conclude with a little mental tool for spotting techno fixes.
Okay, so what is the problem we're trying to fix? I'm sure in the past years, everybody of you heard about the multiple crises, often referring to different difficult situations in world politics. And one thing seems to be sure, we face multiple environmental, social, and political challenges that are closely interconnected. In my work, and also in Rainer's work at Bits und Bäume, the most impending crisis, of course, is the climate catastrophe. We just experienced the hottest July and the wettest December ever recorded. The European Climate Agency even states that in July, it hasn't been this warm in July for the last 120,000 years. And that shows us, or that emphasizes, that we are on a very good path to a climate catastrophe. Our current warming is 1.1 degrees, and we are on a good path to reach 3 degrees. And that's really bad. Because if we surpass 2 or 1.5 degrees warming, we will reach so-called tipping points, which are irreversible changes in the Earth system. And this can lead to many different incidences. One of the worst things are extreme weather incidences like floods, as we saw them in Pakistan in 2022, or droughts, as we experienced in Kenya this year, or forest fires like in Rhodos or Maui. But the climate crisis is also intertwined closely with other ecological crises, like the rapid biodiversity loss, or a crisis of resources like water, metals, or soil, which leads to conflict and exploitation of nature. And of course, social crises are also on the rise. Each year, there are less countries with democratic systems, and we experienced 2 financial crises in the past 15 years. And with the pandemic and the current global conflicts, inequality is rising faster than ever before. So, this seems bad and hopeless, but what if technology could save us.
So, what if tech could save us? Exactly. Could all those crises be solved? Usually we hear about technical innovations and also new companies trying this and hopefully succeeding. So we talk about new technologies, new toys, but also new ways of working and dealing with this. At least this is what investors, innovators, technologists, also billionaires, and also political actors like political parties tell us. And quickly we often talk about blockchain, AI, carbon capture and storage, or carbon air capture. We will now look into this more closely, into the promises, but before we start, we just want to briefly outline some core notions, two core notions to know what's the foundation for our talk, how we operate in this talk. Now, first talking about fictions. Well, we are not all experts. Well, maybe we are, but society-wide, not all experts in all areas, also not technology. So we need stories about the abilities and narratives about the functioning. And fictions are special stories with imaginary or unreal elements. So now the question is, are the tech abilities, can they unfold in the present or in the future, or are they only promises? So if they have a large imaginary part, you could say they are, it's pretty sure we talk about techno fixes, and if the imaginary part or the unreal part is rather small, we talk about at least approaches. Solution is a problematic term. So the question is an approach a solution for a given problem? At the same time, the second notion is sustainability, which is a goal, while technology usually is a tool, not only, it's complex. Sustainability as a goal, and just to briefly outline it, is the ability to fulfill one's needs, not once, but needs, without impeding the present and future generations' ability to solve them. So this implies inter- and intra-generational justice as well as global justice. And as we heard from Rieke, change is necessary. We live in a definitely crazily unsustainable world and with unsustainable lifestyles, not individually, but collectively. And this is, just to stress it, not only nature protection. This is a question of our own livelihoods. Okay, let's get to the misleading tech promises in the sustainability discourse. As Rieke mentioned, we talk about, we recognize there's some patterns how technology is being talked about. And we found there are two types, and both are fictions. Both are somehow distinct, both distract, they distract in different ways, and that's why it's important to make this distinction. We just call them type A, which is discussing fictional technology when there's real technology available for the same problem, even commercially available. So we talk about unsuitable technology when there is suitable technology. Type B is discussing fictional technology when the problem in itself is not a technically solvable problem, when this is a political or social problem. So this is another way of misleading tech discourse, and we want to talk about this now more concretely. Coming to type A of the tech discourse misuse, just to give two examples to make this clear why we are talking about this. First example is automated driving and or electric cars in inner cities. There's a promise of fossil-less mobility with fossil-less engines, less emissions, and also more space on the city, on the city streets. However, and the technology, of course, is electrical engines, then computers on wheels, you could say, with a lot of cameras and sensors, and automatic navigation, and that's kind of what we're heading for if we want to have automated driving or electric cars. However, in reality, we have many, many problems and fundamental problems. The autonomy is a big problem, as we've seen with a lot of chaotic accidents or near accidents in inner cities. This is exactly the focus here. Usually, the city environment is very chaotic. There's a lot of people, then weather comes in, you know, construction sites, all those things. So in order for this to work, we would have to entirely rebuild the city streets. And there's, of course, also errors in those systems. Sometimes the cones create errors for you who have read about it, blocking streets. And in the end, as shown in the picture, the size of an electric car usually is the same size of a fossil-driven car, a fueled car. So in this sense, it's not much of a solution. However, what could be a solution? We are in type A. Well, we can of course talk about public transport. We can talk about multimodal mobility. We can talk about some kinds of architectures of cities of short ways. So if we're looking to have a vehicle where you don't have to drive yourself, of course you go to the next bus stop. So this is driverless from the point of view. But the question is, now we're talking about the discourse misuse, who profits from this kind of narrative? Of course, the big corporations who build and do research on this kind of topics, like Google, Uber, Tesla, and also old car makers who jump onto this train quite late. Okay, the second case is nuclear power or fusion power. What is the promise? Well, it's the promise of unlimited, clean, and free energy for everyone. The technology is quite simple. Well, nuclear power comes from splitting large atoms. Fusion power comes from merging really small atoms. And there we go. But however, in reality, it is a really, really expensive technology. Both are really expensive technologies. Both can only be done in a centralized ways. The fuel usually comes from dictatorships, but okay. And in terms of fusion, they're not even commercially available for the next decades. So the centralized aspect is like we would like to put a stress here. So what could be a solution? Well, a solution for unlimited clean energy, well, of course, wind, water, renewable energy, solar power, some call it remote fusion. This is already commercially available and it could be employed right now. But who profits from talking about nuclear power and fusion? Of course, the big energy corporations, because they know they are the only ones who can employ this kind of technology. And also political actors who really enjoy delaying the discussion about actual transitions. So we have placebo changes for a change of placebos, kind of, and the delay of politics. So this is the aspect of nuclear power and fusion. Now we get to the type B, tech discourse misuses by Rieke.
The other type we identified in our political work is the proposal of tech as a distraction from necessary societal and political change. We also brought two examples. One is GMOs and the other one is AI for environmental issues. GMOs are a very old example that a lot of you may be familiar with. And the basic idea is tech as a solution to world hunger, specifically higher productivity through the usage of genetically modified seeds and herbicides and pesticides. The idea is we end world hunger and improve crop yields. And if you want to understand how it works, glyphosate, for example, is a good example. It's a so-called total herbicide, which means it kills all plants except certain genetically modified varieties. These genetically modified varieties and the corresponding herbicides are provided by just a few companies worldwide, mainly Monsanto Bayer, DuPont, Dow, and Syngenta. They have long names because they all merged in the past years. These three companies own over 60% of the seed market. And the reality is the discussion around GMOs date back even before I was born in 1994. And by now, we know that it did not, in fact, end world hunger, although 15 to 20% of the global agriculture is provided by GMOs. And although the usage of genetically modified plants and herbicides improves crop yields in the short term, in the long term, it has severely negative impacts on biodiversity. It erodes soils, and soils are no longer usable for the cultivation of other varieties for a long time. Also, studies show that the usage severely impacts insect populations, and the WHO suggests that glyphosate might cause cancer, and local communities, especially in the Global South, repeatedly report increasing health complications in communities that are in close contact with herbicides. And furthermore, we have a lot of dependency on these big seed and herbicide providers. So what would be a good solution? The first thing to state is hunger is not a technical problem, because food is not scarce and has never been. There is enough food to feed the world. The problem is distribution, access to land, and heavily leveraged food markets and large-scale export-oriented farming. And the majority of the world is still fed by small farmers and subsistence farming and so-called local food webs, which is also more eco-friendly and sustainable than industrial farming, but does not offer as big of financial profits. So who profits from GMOs? Well, the biggest agribusiness companies, of course. And the second example for tech as a distraction is something we all read about more than enough this year, which is AI. Beforehand of this talk, I looked up some topics we work on at Friends of the Earth, for example, circular economy, oceans or rainforests. And right now you will find a policy paper or an article how all these issues can be solved by artificial intelligence. And if we believe Silicon Valley or the Liberal Party in Germany, AI can save the rainforest, free the oceans from plastic, and recycle almost everything. And this narrative around AI is a very typical technofix, because it implies that all complicated problems that politicians, NGOs, civil society, or people like you are working on for years can be solved by large language models in a few months. And I don't think I have to explain to you that AI can't recycle anything but data or collect plastics from the oceans. And in the best case scenario, AI provides information and new knowledge by processing, for example, environmental data. And it has been used in this way for a long time. But what the narrative like AI can free the oceans from plastic do is distracting us from complicated policy measures like regulating the plastic industry or switch to reusable packaging instead of using single-use plastic. But this way, time and resources are invested in AI and climate solutions. And in the best case, we gain information, but maybe without implementing as any measures. And it's very important to state our main problem in environmentalism is not the lack of knowledge. We need good science, but for the most of the environmental policy, we know everything we need to know. And it's impressive to measure, for example, how pollution increases, glaciers are melting, or rainforests are lost, but this is not news. Info gathering, especially with AI, without action, is a very typical technofix. And of course, there are many other examples of big solutions for social and environmental problems with the same patterns. For example, the implementation of cryptocurrencies instead of transforming or regulating our current financial system, or CCS, as the talk by my colleagues explained before. But now the question is, why do these technofixes work so well?
Yes, why does the distraction work so well? Well, we see two underlying causes or two underlying reasons. And those two reasons are, first, the ones who spread those kind of narratives, they have the main motivation of staying in power. They're usually the incumbents in those given markets, but also in the given intellectual space. They are the oligopoles in the markets. But this is also true for people in the political space who just want to stay where they are when they're in a powerful position. The second one is a wrong understanding of technology, of society, and of the context. So one could say the first one is the cause of evil, and the second one is incompetence. Maybe the duality is the common duality. And maybe it's important to say that maybe the second one might not be malmeaning, but it supports often the first one and the other way around as well. So this is more an analytical distinction, but they often go hand in hand. Now, Rika will explain the first of those reasons, and I will explain the second afterwards.
A recurring theme that we found is that so-called techno fixes are proposed by companies that already yield a lot of market power. We call that new tech old players. And we have, again, two examples, agribusiness and mining supply chains. Because if we look closer at the proposed solutions, especially regarding digital tech, many players that drive innovation or rule supply chains have been around for decades. A good example is, again, digital agriculture. At first glance, plants might not seem very technical, but agribusiness corporations have always been tech companies. The development of GMOs, pesticides, and fertilizers were always technological processes. And with the rise of digital agriculture tech, these companies seek to maintain their monopolies by buying tech startups and implementing digital tech into their business fields. Our friends at the ETC group even state every sector of the industrial food chain is in the process to transforming into a digital enterprise. And so drones or robots or new GMO might seem very futuristic, but in the end, they are provided by old companies like Bayer Monsanto or BASF, who want to keep their monopoly on the food chain. Similarly, the production of digital hardware can be considered fairly new, maybe, like Apple, Microsoft, SAP, but the supply and extraction of the materials that are needed for the production, such as metals, minerals, or other resources, is operated by the same companies and supply chains that already provided these materials, for example, the car or the chemical industry, for almost centuries. And the resources are mostly extracted from the global south to be used in the global north. And these supply chains have been established since colonial times and are maintained by trade agreements and international institutions until today. Our colleagues at, for example, ATTAC have very good work on this. But for example, the extraction of cobalt from the Democratic Republic of Congo or the mining of lithium in Latin America is not very new. Also, the stories of human rights violations or ecological harms are not new, but the production of tech itself intensified the demand for these resources. And here we can see again, the tech might be new, but the supply chain is built on very old power structures. Ah, yeah, oh God. Yeah, and the second thing we see is the promise of tech actors to be different, but behaving in the same way established companies do. We call that new players, old systems. A great example, of course, is Elon Musk and Tesla. Maybe this is a good moment to mention the great work of the journalist Paris Marx. And we can only recommend his book and his podcast if you're interested in these themes. And of course, we all know that Elon Musk is not like the other billionaires. And he wants to be humans to be a multi-planetary species and fight important wars against anti-white racism on Twitter. And this might seem funny, but in the past two decades, he has been a very good example for this type of a visionary tech billionaire who is respected by politics and journalists for innovations. And with Tesla, for example, he greatly profited from this idea of electrification as a climate solution. And the idea for electric cars have also been around for a very long time. The last German emperor even owned electric cars. But Tesla defined in our time that these cars need to fulfill an image of a very masculine mobility, maybe, which means being heavy and big. And the business model is basically offering an electric car that feels like it is fueled by gasoline. And this, of course, makes Teslas the opposite of sustainable. They require large batteries, and these require a lot of resources and have a high demand for energy to move around. And the electric cars that would really support the ecological transformation would, in the best case, be buses, for example, but in any case would be very smaller and fewer and not the primary source of mobility for people. And another very good example for tech companies that are new players but work in old systems are Amazon and Lieferando, for example. Both own like shiny headquarters in Berlin and Hamburg, for example, the Amazon Tower, and promote ideals of new work and innovation, but still have business models that are based on very classic models of exploitation of cheap labor for profits. I think it's very telling that in 2022, Jeff Bezos earned around $8 million per hour, while employees in delivery in Germany for Amazon earned around 15 euros an hour. So although technology and emerging companies seem futuristic and new, in many cases, the technology only renews the power of old players, or the new emerging players are built on the same destructive systems as the old ones.
And now we come to the second of the two reasons we found, which we described wrong understanding of tech and society, the incompetence argument, maybe one could say. Well, oftentimes technology does not deliver on its promises. Let's, for example, say the revolutionary endeavor for, let's say, cryptocurrencies. Because quite often there are inappropriate concepts of the technology and of the society and of the context underlying. So one could say there are two kinds and they're intertwined somehow. So the first one is the understanding of the functionality of the technology itself. We all heard the talk about immutability and the distribution and the trustless. And when once we look at the technology, it is of course mutable and it is very little distributed and you need a lot of trust for this to work. The same is true for the AI technologies, where oftentimes journalists and sometimes even the technological proponents don't even understand how it's really working and just dig into the promises. Same was true, let's say, 10 years ago about big data and the wonders that can be done with the new kinds of data. The second aspect is a reduced understanding of humans and society as it works. Common misunderstandings there are humans are just computers. You know, they mainly work like this. The brain is nothing else than a processing, like data processing unit, but just in meat. However, if we look at the all kinds of social sciences, this is exactly not how it works. At the same time, there's a lot of belief of society, mainly beliefs of transactions, meaning that all is basically game theory, and so all human interactions can be framed like this. And trust between humans is it's a bug. And of course, when I have this kind of assumption and I see human beings and Bain as mainly economic interactors, then I can apply technology that models exactly this and is being able to model exactly this. However, that's why oftentimes this goes wrong, because society doesn't work like this and human interaction also doesn't work like this. So in the end, this kind of application goes wrong, does not help with the solution, does not help with the problems we've been proposing, and oftentimes it also creates a lot of harm. Not only because it takes up discussion space and also funding, but because people who invested, that could be money, could be time, could be hope into this, of course, lose, and of course, oftentimes to the bigger players in the field. So the framework conditions and the embedding of the technology itself, the social embedding, is key in this misunderstanding. However, there are a lot of solutions in the context what we have talked about, and of course we don't only want to talk about techno fixes and how everything is bad, but we have a lot of solutions, and this I think is a really good news, especially for our chaos family here. We have a lot of well-known working tech, and a lot of it is low tech that can be maintained, understood, shared, and learned, including all the wonders of skill sharing and free software and all such things. But this, of course, has to be implemented. But also, apart from the digital aspects, I mean, we all have heard the terms of a bike city or public transport, as mentioned before, of the 20-hour week, of smaller cars, but also small-scale agriculture, which actually works, or non-profit food markets, down to plant-based food, or renewable energy, as we all know that, for example, solar power is not a very complex technology, hopefully, luckily anymore. So what's necessary, of course, is reform of markets and the economy with ideas of degrowth or circular economy, which of course is very, very hard, but it is necessary. We cannot refrain from doing the right thing because other things seem easier because they just don't work. I think maybe some of you might think of the person looking for the car keys under the light, although having lost them somewhere else, but it's easier to search under the light. So we have to talk about financial system democratization, and all those things are hard to do. And the key aspect, as always, is not so much talking about the technological implementation, but also about the social transition implied by this. So we have to talk about something like climate money from CO2 taxes, about financial support for the economically weak within society, but also about increasing taxes. I mean, if we know that the average like rich person's tax is like 1%, I guess all of us, if we look at our pay slip, this is actually a narrative that shows how much inequality there is. And of course, the transition will need some effort, but this can all be done. As we say, there's a lot of the technological solutions already there. And we have to focus more on collective social security than into individual safety. And the question is always around the corner, what is it that makes us happy? Of course, we like to tinker with technology, hack stuff, build stuff, but equally important it is the time we spend with each other and the time learning, understanding something and sharing that we've just understood something. So sharing this with the chaos family, with our community, with our friends and partners. So there is such thing as social wealth. This is something to strive for. Or time wealth, that there's enough time to do all those things and also time for regeneration and for taking care of each other in darker times. So we can later on hack together again. So, saying this, the sustainable future is a great future. To conclude, so we hope we made a case, a brief case, although that technofixes distract our minds and slow down the necessary change. And as maybe promised, this is like a little cognitive tool to spot a technofix or to ask the right questions. Some of you might know the Weizenbaum test. It's kind of the analogous to the Turing test. Maybe look it up if you're interested. The questions we would ask to propose to spot a technofix is, who proposes it? What is the supply chain? What are the actors who are not in the front but in the back? So follow where the things come from and where the parts come from. Literally, but also symbolically. But also, what is the definition of the problem? So make people who suggest a certain solution, can you say a little bit more what the problem is you try to fix before you start fountaining the solution you have? Or maybe explain a little bit more or talk about the societal background, the context, and also the social embedding of it. Because always when we design technology, we design social practice. And this is key. So if someone proposes a certain technological solution but cannot answer how this would be embedded in existing practices or how new practices could look like, I mean, there's good ideas everywhere, then this is already an indicator. So we would like to conclude with like the call, let's talk about usable technology and apply it. We have to unlock the real potential, and then we're good for the golden future. And those are some references. If you're curious about all this, come to us later on. And then thanks a lot for your attention.
Thank you. And of course, this talk and nearly all work we do in in our NGOs or at activists. It's a team effort. This includes the Bits and Bäume crew, of course, our colleagues, incredible activists, many individual researchers, and of course the angels here, the content team and the VOC. So applause for them.
Thank you. Thank you, Rika and Rainer. So if you have questions, don't be afraid to line up at the microphones and or participate online. I'm having a look at the signal angel. Is there anything from the internet? Nothing from the internet, but from microphone two, please.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for the talk. So maybe I had a bit of confusion, but so you had proposed, for example, instead of electric cars, try to push buses. But, you know, coming from the U.S., how would you solve the issue that you're trying to propose something that maybe the greater population doesn't want? And my thinking was, when you propose that, the first politician that tries to force that down is going to be the first politician that loses their job in record time. So, and you know, you talked about Tesla as well. Tesla didn't form in a vacuum, right? There's context as to how they ended up the way they are, right? Nobody else was really pushing you. Like you've mentioned, electric cars have been around for longer than gasoline cars. It's true, but yeah. I mean, nobody else has really pushed it until they made it popularized. So how would you propose that actual fundamental issue of like, okay, you're pushing against what people want or what they perceive that they want, right? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm not a specialist on transportation in the US. I can highly recommend the book by Paris Marx on transportation and Silicon Valley. And I think it's true that the transformation process politically is hard, but I think the future of having, for example, walkable cities and good public transportation is something that is very attractive to a lot of people. And I think with our talk, what we want to say is not necessarily this, or maybe it's not a manual what a politician can do tomorrow, but the way we have to look at tech to find real solutions. And if we want to tackle the climate crisis, and if we want to do it in a way that allows people to live in community, we need concepts like walkable cities, public transport, like we saw on the picture you had on your slide. And I think Tesla is answering the questions how we should transform transportation with big electric cars, and that's not the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would like to add, I think all your points are really valid and really important. However, we cannot mix fundamental democratic problems with these issues we have been discussing here, because from my knowledge, I'm also not being an expert on US transportation, there is a lot of support for this kind of transitioning, but the democratic process does not reflect this. And this is a much, much bigger issue. And the second point is we focused on inner cities. Of course, there are a lot of use cases where big cars and, you know, all those are actually necessary. But the first thing would be, how about the inner cities, where there's a space problem, where there's a lot of infrastructure that is built around cars? And usually, I mean, especially in the US, people need cars because there's no public transportation, so it's somehow a circular question. And I think what I've known from New York, there are at least some small plants growing, maybe pushing back cars a little bit. It is a really, really heavy process. But this doesn't change to at least derive from knowing where we should go, what would be the actual political next steps. So those things, those levels exist at the same time. And with Tesla, maybe one comment as well. I would like to discuss, maybe not now, but how much like from the outcome. I mean, the narrative space has been filled up by this, but how much did those actions, activities really pay into solving the problems we mentioned? Because it seems like it did, but I would say in numbers, in emissions, in let's say affordability, all those questions. You know, I would say that the Tesla narrative takes much more space than it actually has solved on the ground. Yeah, maybe that was helpful.
Thank you.
Microphone 4, please. Be concise. We're running out of time, unfortunately.
Okay. Thank you for your presentation. I have a quite similar question as the last one, but I don't have as much Anspruch. I don't know the word in English, sorry. Let's just say, how do we get the message across to the conservative side or the economic liberal side of society? Also some factions of left to center also, like, yeah, we need to growth hack, take us out of the problem. Even if they disagree, this talk should be like, yeah, you should put CDU members, FDP members, like, into the whole and all the seats, and like, so they don't can pretend that they ignore it.
Yeah, you want to start?
No, you can start.
Okay, this is also, I think, a really good remark. This is maybe kind of the mental preparation to see where we're at, and once we talk with different people. The question is how to approach. And I mean, the first step is always try to not be the useful idiot. I mean, you know, that means me and us as well, like implicitly taking the talking points. But concretely, I mean, if I talk to Christians and I say, how about protecting God's creation? When I talk to liberals, how about the liberation energy which makes us independent from dictatorships? You know, there could be a story to tell, but I think besides all the talk from narratives, I think we still have to remember this is a power struggle. It's nice to have the narratives and to talk about people, but always to keep in mind, this is a power struggle. We have to talk about things, but also organize and go interaction, get political. This is really, some people cannot be convinced because they have their vested interest in this. So this would be maybe my answer. But Rieke, you wanted to say something as well.
I would say the same thing. I don't know if we can convince people in the Liberal Party or in the Conservative Party that we should invest in ideas that don't yield as much profit. I don't think this is a good strategy. I think what we know from experience, and I'm not just an historian on movements, but every time like a technology was pushed back, it was with a lot of street effort, a lot of activism, a lot of protest. And when we think about nuclear power, that's an achievement of a big movement. The same thing with, we talked about GMOs, and we don't use GMOs in Germany and Europe, for example, and that's also a win by a movement. So if we want to push back technologies, it's a fight, yes. I would say. And also, especially if we talk about mobility is something we do for ourselves, we do for our livelihoods, we do to be close to the people we like, to transform cities and landscapes. And that's something we have to fight for. And I think that's why you need good activism. And that's why we need places like this here, because, I mean, you all are activists for the things that are moved by the CCC, right?
Yeah, and this is also what I would like to add.
Sorry, I have to remind you. Yeah,
just one sentence. Some people say those kind of utopias, this is just, you know, imaginary fantasies, and once you wake up, you have the hard world. I think what we all show here for the 4 days and then afterwards everywhere, building things that actually do work. We sit here with thousands of people and people, you know, get their water, electricity, internet, and on every stand there are people who build such things. So this is, utopia is not a dream, it's the starting point for the things that exist as parallel options for people to choose. And then even maybe the hardcore conservative would say, really, you did this and it worked and everyone, you know, you had those talks and they're all online? Oh, okay, maybe there's something to think about. It's not just, you know, crazy ideas.
Or they don't have a choice.
Yeah.